You are listening to the number one movie in America bonus episode. My name is Robin Hitchcock, and I am here with Sean Collier.
Hi. It's a long movie, everybody.
Yeah, we're here to talk about Zack Snyder's Justice League, also known as the Snyder Cut. And for anyone who missed last week or missed our last couple episodes, just a programming note, which is that the number one movie in America are regular episodes where we discuss a randomly picked movie that won a box office weekend, have gone to a bi-weekly schedule. And on the off weeks, basically, it's going to be Sean and I talking about whatever movie thing it is that we want to talk about in shorter, hopefully, and significantly less edited episodes. So if you are one of those jagweeds who leaves comments on women's podcasts saying, great podcast, it would be better if you didn't say and ah so much. This is not going to be the episode for you because we're going to say and ah, and I'm not going to take the time to cut them out.
Listen to the main feed if you want precision.
Yep.
This is a movie chat. Hey, it's podcasting. There are lots of shows that are 4 hours long for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
We're not that. There's just stammering more than
movies.
We like to.
There's lots of movies that are 4 hours long.
I was going to say, we should say occasionally, you know, there might be some time when we go a little while in between minisodes, but that will require there not being a frustrating / hilarious movie news story to discuss, which basically never happens. So
right.
If it's a quiet week, you know, we're not going to force it. We're not going to, you know, have the Tom and Jerry breakdown, a movie I still haven't watched.
I watched Tom and Jerry. I was going to give up on it, but in that film, all animals are cartoons. That's mm-hmm. like the premise. And I really wanted to see if meat was a cartoon. And so I was like, I'm going to stick around until they show some meat. Then they did. And then there were like 20 minutes left. And I was like, all right, I'm going to finish this movie. It's not horrible. It's also the most likable I've ever found Colin Jost, which is to say I did not want to punch him every single second he was on screen.
I keep being at the drive-in where they're showing Tom and Jerry and then something interesting afterwards. And every time I'm like, I could just show up early and watch Tom and Jerry. And even I, who always want to be at the drive-in, I'm like, it's fine. I don't need to. I'm sure I'll collide with it because as movie theaters are reopening and more drive-ins are reopening, there was a weird thing in the box office this week where all of this stuff that has been out for months gained screens because more movie theaters are reopening. And they were like, what do we show? I don't know. Wonder Woman? You know, there's only so many things. The War with Grandpa from like 7 months ago shot up this weekend as theaters desperately tried to fill screens. So
is that our new number one movie of America or returning number one movie of America?
It already was a number one movie in America. Raya and the Last Dragon is just winning week after week, like by default.
Oh, okay, sure.
Which will probably be broken by at least Godzilla versus Kong. It will probably be broken by nobody with Bob Odenkirk, which I have thoughts on. I think I will save them for the main feed because we're here to talk about the thing that everyone talked about for years. And now that it's happened, okay, it's there. Sure, whatever.
So full disclosure, if you follow me on Twitter at HitchDied, you already know this. I slept through about a movie's worth of movie while watching the Snyder Cut. I fell asleep. I'm not 100% sure when I fell asleep. It was definitely this point, like I kept falling asleep and waking up. And at some point I told Colin, like, just let it happen. Cause he kept being like nudge. And I was like, I can't stay awake. And I woke up again when, are we doing spoilers?
Oh yeah. I should say this is a spoiler episode because clearly anyone who cares about Zack Snyder's Justice League enough to worry about spoilers for a movie that already came out, watched it immediately, or they have a job. But so, you know, yes, we're going to spoil in this episode.
So I woke up while Flash was turning back time. I was like, this seems interesting. I should be awake. Fell back asleep. And then I woke up during the dream sequence premonition thing. Boy, is that a weird time to rejoin this movie.
Yeah, look, let's jump to that, because if Zack Snyder doesn't care about making sense of the timeline, why should this podcast?
Does Batman have superpowers in this universe? Like, does he have premonitions?
There's some weird things happening with premonitions that I will bet would eventually have been explained not as Batman having superpowers, but as some timey-wimey stuff. Because everything they were setting up there involved people traveling in time to prevent the thing happening or whatever, but fundamentally, I don't know, and it doesn't matter, because they're not going to make any of these movies. A thing that Zack Snyder knew and acknowledged and responded to by just spending an hour of this movie peppering in stuff, knowing he didn't have to pay it off. So, like, that's infuriating and fun. It's like, why are you bothering setting up all this stuff that is never going to happen? But also, it's kind of fun that, like, you could be like, Harley Quinn's dead, Superman's evil, doesn't matter.
Honestly, I can't believe I'm saying this, but it felt a little Lynchian.
Oh, no.
I almost made Sean do a spit take.
I guess so. Like, yeah, we flash forward to an unexplained alternate reality that will never get a justification.
And
so
up with no chance of payoff, or, you know, not no chance, sorry. Setting things up and then the viewers have no real expectation of them being paid off.
I think that's the question we all shudder to ask. Is that stuff in there because he had some money and had some time and wanted to do a little bit of this, a little bit of stuff to indicate what he wanted to be setting up in future movies, and just seize the opportunity to do that at the end? Or is he thinking, well, the fans got this done. Mm-hmm. Maybe they can get me my job back and we can make these movies later.
There is no doubt in my mind that some part of Zack Snyder believes he will get to make those movies.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like a result. Like, DC doesn't have any better ideas, so mm-hmm. why the hell not? Even at that, it's bizarre, because I really liked that sequence.
Okay.
Because it throws out all of this interesting stuff that provides the surprise that is otherwise missing from a movie that, while much, much different, fundamentally we saw 4 years ago.
Right.
So to drop, you know, at the tail end of that experience, like, hey, guess what? Joker killed Robin, and Batman maybe killed Harley Quinn, and maybe Aquaman's dead, and also the bad guys and good guys are teaming up because evil Superman destroyed the world. That's so interesting that I loved that scene. Mm-hmm. But if it is setting up, like, I want to make these movies, well, you just spoiled Justice League 2, I think, and jumped to the middle of Justice League 3, and it's just such a bizarre choice to, you know, here's a bit of a future movie, you know, pursuant to nothing, that doesn't really affect the plot of this movie you're watching.
Yep. So my overall take on this, I am predisposed to hate this. Let's put it that way. I never finished Man of Steel because I was so annoyed by it. I found Batman, I really only watched Batman vs. Superman for Wonder Woman and found it annoying. I mean, like, fine, but annoying. Yeah. And then Justice League, which you can hear Sean and I talking about 4 years ago, I thought was fine. I liked it more than other people did. I enjoyed some of the changes, particularly the color palette thing. I am generally opposed to "I can barely see it, everything is gray" as a color palette, especially for superhero movies.
And hey, there's an even grayer version coming out. Oh. So enjoy that.
So there's all that. It's like, you know, I'm not crazy about this universe to begin with. Let's put it that way. And then there is the whole male privilege of it all, where I truly cannot believe that this exists. That's it. Like, so for years, people were saying release the Snyder Cut, which apparently did not exist, right? Like, most of this, it wasn't like it was in the can. It was like he made it in the past couple years, right?
Yes. It's what existed was, you know, some kind of a work print, which is an unwatchable thing.
Right.
Which is an assemblage of barely more than dailies, some of which are edited in coherence, some of which aren't. That's what the Snyder Cut people were demanding was, which was completely unwatchable. It was not a finished product.
So then Warner Brothers was like, you get a small movie's budget to make more movie.
Right.
$70 million. That's a medium-sized movie.
Mm-hmm.
They shot a lot of new stuff, and then he released a four-hour movie that is basically inexplicably in a 4:3 aspect ratio. And shot 4:4:3. So, okay, let's talk about the aspect ratio of it all, because Sean and I have talked about aspect ratios a good bit because it's something that we find interesting.
To non-nerds, that's the shape of the picture.
Right.
Yeah.
So my understanding from Twitter is that the reason that it's 4:3 is that that is closer to the shape of IMAX. This was not shot on IMAX, was it?
No.
Okay.
No. I guess that to a modern filmmaker with, you know, idiosyncrasies, IMAX frames, you know, those giant building-sized screens, are like CinemaScope was to directors two generations ago. Mm-hmm. Like, the thing that they think makes it look grand is to mm-hmm. be Avatar-shaped. So I guess that's why he did it.
But here's the important difference there. Is you aren't meant to look at the whole screen. A no. big chunk of the screen is meant to be below your frame of vision and above your frame of vision. The idea with IMAX is that it completely fills your frame of vision. You're not supposed to look at all of this. His right. is shot like First Cow or The Lighthouse, where you are supposed to look at all of this, which is a bizarre choice for an incredibly epic film.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, he thinks it's CinemaScope. It's not. That's not what's going on. And it's frustrating to me because 90% of the people watching this, they're not. Are they doing a theatrical release?
No, not at all. This is one of the key HBO Max exclusives.
So everyone is watching it on a rectangular TV.
Right. TVs aren't 4:3.
And I spent the first 25 years of my life clamoring for letterboxed material. Right. And, there's so many great films I've only ever seen in a butchered for TV format for the old shape of TVs. So I feel a responsibility to be comfortable with window boxing or pillar boxing, as it is also called. But it feels weird. And I think it was less weird to me because I've been watching so much old television. Like, I've been watching at least one episode of The Rockford Files before bed for the last 3 weeks.
That's so fun.
It is fun. That show's great. So I've been watching a lot of Pillarbox content, but it's The Rockford Files. It's not Batman and Superman, flying through the sky.
That is one of innumerable just bizarre decisions involved in this thing. It's like, for example, making it 4 hours and 2 minutes long. Mm-hmm.
It's a flex is what it is. It's him saying, oh, I finally get to, it's like, and that goes back to my whole male privilege frustration with this movie. It's like every idea that I have is a good one, right? The people have been clamoring for my vision. And therefore, I need to create a vision, which is weird. And so I am going to make it the wrong aspect ratio, and I'm going to make it the wrong length, and people are going to love it because it's mine.
The confusing thing is, Zack Snyder is not now, nor ever was, a particularly good director. Like, he's made some good movies, but he hasn't made a great movie ever. He's not an auteur. He is a popcorn filmmaker with a distinctive style
mm-hmm.
that you know you can think is good or bad, but he's not a great artist. So when you let him do everything he wants without filter, it's not a perfect vision. It's just kind of idiosyncratic and weird.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my overall take, we're still on overall takes, everybody. My overall take is this is a little better than the other one.
At Agreed.
What cost? You know, like
$70 million. That's the cost. Oh, and 2 hours of our lives. Or 4 hours of our lives.
$70 million, 4 hours of our lives, years of irritating hype, and like legitimately harassing a lot of people on Twitter. And the result of that is I reviewed the original at a 6 and I reviewed this one at a 7. Is that worth all of the hype when, or just make a new movie? I mean, I know that people care about this a lot because it is the traditionally biggest superheroes of all time, and this was the first time they were all in one big fun adventure together, and it should have been better, and so they made a version that was a little bit better. But even the parts that are good, which are numerous, are definitely mitigated by the fact that it's 4 hours and 2 minutes long. Like, that's...
And it doesn't need to be. It really doesn't. Like, I think that maybe this movie, I don't want to say needed to be, could have been 3 hours long and been worth it, much in the way that I think it was fine for Endgame to be 3 hours long. You know, these are big stories. I am not opposed to movies occasionally being that long. It's more the standard length of movies going to 2 hours and 30 minutes is the thing that I object to. And I love it when you got a 90-minute movie. But they're, like, right off the bat, it's like, we're going to do every scene in slow motion. Why?
Really? It would be 3 hours if he weren't allowed to hit that slow motion button.
Right. And we're going to have this woman sing an entire lamentation in Iceland. Like, why? Why? And I don't know, in the first 40 minutes or so, I was like, oh, is this going to be about grief? That goes away.
No, it's about daddy issues. At one point, right. I was like, oh, Robin's in trouble because...
Was it the cyborg part?
The Flash as a dad part? I don't know if you sleep...
No, I was awake for the Flash and his dad.
Cyborg and his father are kind of like the core at the middle of this movie.
Honestly,
now.
Oh, that was the last part that I think I was awake for.
His dad dies eventually too.
I was not awake for that, but that makes sense.
Yeah, his dad like did something that prevented Steppenwolf from getting a mother box for a minute and killed himself in the process.
Okay.
And then before you woke back up again, there was a 15-minute epilogue where Cyborg was listening to a tape from his father. Mm-mm. And you probably slept through Superman going to, I don't know, someplace where he heard the voices of Kevin Costner and Russell Crowe.
Oh, 100%. Oh, that changes my Oscar nominee count.
Everyone's dad matters except Wonder Woman. Thank God for what... By the way, without Wonder Woman, you don't have a movie here. But it's not... No, it's not about grief. It's about the same shit that they're all about. Anyway, I interrupted you. Go on.
I don't remember. Oh, I think I was going to say, I agreed. I think that this movie is better. There were sequences that I was like, this is dope. I'm really enjoying this. The whole Amazon fight was so much better here and so fun to watch. And it made me want to watch a good Wonder Woman movie again, you know, there were really cool action sequences, some of which had excessive slow motion, but I was able to deal with it in the moment. All of which had an objectionable color palette, but I was able to deal with it in the moment. So, and I do think I'm going to watch the part I slept through because what I was going to say is I think I slept through everything with Superman. I was awake when he was evil, but did not speak. So, yeah, and I hear that everybody's like, oh, Superman's really cool in this movie. Did they fix his face?
They fixed his face.
Okay, good.
Literally every shot. I mean, it's hard to believe that this is true, but allegedly every frame Joss Whedon shot is gone. And all of the messed up face stuff was in reshoots after Joss Whedon showed up.
Because so in Zack Snyder's original cut, it was before he grew his mustache for Fallout.
Right.
Got it.
Right. So his face is fixed. And it's, look, it's much, the one of the biggest differences that really works is Superman joining up just hits now. Like,
okay.
It was so poorly handled the first time that when Superman joined the fight, it was like, well, yeah, I knew we were, okay.
Right.
And now, you know, he swoops in at the last minute and he isn't quippy and silly and he's just Superman beating up the bad guy who doesn't stand a chance. And it's good. Problem with both versions is that in neither one of them is Steppenwolf anything other than like the guy who's going to get killed later.
I really like his cheese grater costume.
Yeah, he looks better. That's true.
For sure. And I thought that looked really cool. I thought that made him inherently more interesting as a villain. I can't remember. Was Darkseid involved at all in the original cut?
No. He's new to the Snyder Cut. And that's better, too. You know, everything about the villain structure is better, other than the fact that you know that Steppenwolf has no chance. But yeah, they're you know, they set up... Steppenwolf was always Diet Thanos at best.
Mm.
And so this is, you know, them establishing why the villain was such a pushover. Well, because he was, you know, really a pawn of the big villain who was going to be building throughout the series. That definitely works more as well. Were you awake when the Flash got that hot dog? Because that's the best moment in the whole thing.
Okay, that actually transitions beautifully into what I wanted to talk about, and then we should transition to final thoughts before our gimmick. One thing that is frustrating about this movie, I do think that losing some of the Joss Whedon quips works, right? One of the things that maybe was a little awkward in the original cut is that, you know, it felt really forced sometimes when they were making jokes. My natural inclination is to want there to be jokes, right? Sure. I am a comedian, and those are the comic books that I read, right?
Right.
And Zack Snyder, I think, is the least funny person alive.
No,
I believe he has no sense of humor. And then there were things that should be hilarious, like him grabbing a hot dog. I also think that Ezra Miller looking at Iris West and then looking at a phallic symbol is a beautiful representation of bisexuality. But it's like he plays it as a cool action moment rather than a joke. And then the number one failure to understand even an iota of humor, which will frustrate me for the rest of my life, is they do this huge epic sequence of the Amazons and the Atlanteans hiding their mother boxes, and then they show the race of men putting in at a hole like 2 feet deep. That is true. So funny. That is so funny. And he does not play it for laughs, because I don't think he has ever laughed once in his entire life.
No, he used the like 4 drops of humor he possessed during the Dawn of the Dead remake and has never met another one. I mean, look at Watchmen, look at 300. Oh, speaking of which, the fact that Zack Snyder's abdominal muse, Gerard Butler, was not Zeus in that little sequence blows my mind. How was that not Gerard Butler?
I don't think Gerard Butler is in that kind of shape.
Probably not.
I guess they could have given a CGI torso.
It would look better than Joss Whedon's absence of mustache.
Yes.
No, there's no humor to this. There's no levity to this. That's probably better than awkwardly swinging between the two, like the theatrical kind. But yeah, it's that's why I don't really want those other movies. As much as I'm curious about the stuff that was set up in the Flash Forward, Premonition, whatever. I don't care about Martian Manhunter, and I don't know why anyone thinks I do.
Because Martian Manhunter's really cool.
I'm sure he is, but like, I don't think that this series is going to make him cool.
Yeah.
I know that more of this, even as much as it would be kind of interesting, would still be a humorless Icelandic singing slog.
Yeah. So, any final thoughts, or was that your final thoughts?
I really liked when Albert taught Diana how to make good tea. That was good.
Alfred? Yeah, you said Albert.
I said Albert?
Yeah.
Because this series is so far away from the Alfred we know that he's just Albert in my mind.
Can I tell a quick unrelated anecdote?
Yeah.
I was playing Pictionary with my sister, and she was drawing, okay, the thing that she was trying to get me to say was Alfred Hitchcock.
Uh-huh.
She got me to say Alfred very quickly by drawing Batman and then drawing a person next to Batman.
Sure.
And then the way she got me to say Hitchcock was to draw our family.
That's good.
And I got it pretty quickly. And then everybody else who we were playing with was like, you guys cannot be pairs again because you have a shared life together as sisters.
This is too easy. You gotta mix up the teams in a game like that. pair the mismatched strangers.
Right.
My final thought is, like Alfred and the tea and the Flash and the hot dog and some improvements to, you know, the final sequence, there's a lot I liked here. It's not a bad movie. Unless you are clamoring for it, it's not worth, you know, the length of a drive from New York to Boston. It's not. That's why I and I think a lot of people harp on the runtime, because the merits of this are not worth the commitment. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean it's a bad movie. That means it's not really for anyone. And like I teased on our previous bonus episode, when you already literally cut it into episodes, it would have been so much better served as a miniseries than as a thick movie. Robin, what's your final thought?
I do think it is worth watching, and why not watch it in 6 or 7 sittings? I can't remember how many parts there were. You've already watched it if you were one of the people who wanted the Snyder Cut, and I'm sure you loved it. Good for you. And if you're like me and you are just curious about what you expected would be a real boondoggle, it's not. It's good, and it's interesting. So I do think it's worth watching, but in chunks. I do think I will eventually watch the middle 2 hours.
Yeah, why not?
But I don't feel any urgency to do so. But this isn't, like you said, it's not in theater. So this is not one of those things where it's leaving HBO Max in 30 days, right?
No, I think it's going to be there forever.
Okay.
And soon you can watch it. That wasn't a joke. Soon there is a weird grayscale alternate cut that...
Blood and Chrome or something version of Fury Road?
No, but that sounds fun.
I have watched the first part of it several times because I love that movie so much, and it does look very cool. I have never made it all the way through because it doesn't look nearly as cool as the actual movie, and I always end up wanting to watch the actual movie.
When people are like, here's a black and white version, I'm like, did you design or shoot it for black and white? No, then it's just going to be like, okay, this is different.
George Miller's original vision was black and white, but I don't think he shot it for that. Again, talking about, you know, the creative integrity. Is that what they call? They're like, to preserve Zack Snyder's creative integrity, this is presented in 4:3. I will be making jokes about that for the rest of my life. In fact, I debuted a comedy piece that I directed and edited last night on Sunday, the 21st. And after I submitted it to Mike to upload, I was like, oh, I should have put a creative vision joke at the beginning. especially because it's a compilation of a Zoom call and TikTok videos. And so there are some wild aspect ratio choices. Right, anyway, right, go watch my dinner with IG.
And this is why you listen to the bonus episodes for content like this. I'm probably not allowed to specify the details, but I will tease for our Pittsburgh listeners. There will be a ridiculously cool outdoor screening of Mad Max Fury Road sometime this summer.
Oh,
so keep an eye out for that.
Okay.
It is a source of legitimate joy for me. Great. Justice League. Whatever. that's the scariest thing. That after all of this, most of the reaction is like, okay,
Cool.
Yeah, sure. There it is. Robin, you asked a fine question pursuant to, you know, the creator's artistic vision.
I asked Sean, and I've also asked Camille, and she may or may not have answers for us. Is there a movie which you would like to see a Mulligan cut of? Mm-hmm. Now, there's different ways to think of this. I saw that Devin Sawa tweeted, what movie would you like to see a 4-hour version of? And people responded with a lot of comedies where they were like, I just want more jokes. And that makes sense to me. And this is not a situation where it's like, think of another movie where the director left in the middle and you wonder what the original director would have done. If you have an answer along those lines, I am interested to hear it. I just think there's so few movies where that applies that I couldn't think of any. It's more like a movie that you saw the elements of greatness in and it didn't quite get there and you wish they got a second chance to do it the way you wanted it to be. Which is really what the Snyder Cut is. It was the grimdark fans saying, oh, I wish they made this grimdark. And then Zack Snyder eventually was like, you got it, dudes.
I have two. One is far more serious than the other. The frivolous one first. I want to see the version of Kill Bill Tarantino in the world where Tarantino insisted on keeping it one movie. And mm-hmm. then Miramax said, fine, but you're cutting it down.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that would have been the best possible. I love the Kill Bill movies. I actually think they're the best Tarantino movie. And I have watched them in one sitting with an intermission. And okay. I think that was a little better. I think that there's a nice narrative arc to the two of them that's lost in watching them 6 months apart. Or on consecutive nights, whatever. But also, you know, it's an overlong Tarantino movie. That doesn't mean that there wasn't fat that could be trimmed. So I think that if you, like, let him keep it as one movie, but then said, fine, but it's not going to be 4 hours long.
Right.
The thing that would have resulted is probably the best conceivable version of Kill Bill, is one that is epic in scope and has that narrative arc, but isn't, you know, doesn't go on forever.
I would love to see that. I don't think I'll end up wishing I lived in a universe where that was Kill Bill, because I am the person who loves Volume 1 and has watched it many times and found Volume 2 frustrating and boring and have watched it twice. So I love ending it where Volume 1 ends and moving on with my life. So
that is a discussion topic for another day. That's the two-part thing is really hard to pull off, because this just happened with It Chapters 1 and 2, where the first one, like, the world was on fire, and the second one, everyone went, blew it. and I've also watched those back-to-back, and it's a little better that way. Like, for some reason, it seems really hard to nail a two-long movies, but not three.
I mean, from a storytelling perspective, it is very hard to start in the middle and watch ending only, because endings tend to be the hardest part of a story to tell and the least satisfying for the viewer. Really, the way that good endings work is that they get to the fireworks factory and wrap it up and everybody goes home. So stretching the ending of something out into a movie length is a recipe for failure.
What did we just see? Coming to America. It's her. You're getting married. Bye. Yeah, that's a good ending.
Mm-hmm. So, my main answer, really my only answer, and maybe this is because Passover is this weekend or starts this weekend, is The Prince of Egypt. Have you ever seen that movie? It's from the late 90s. I think it's Warner Brothers, but I'm not totally sure. Animated movie.
Okay, I
Exodus story.
My brain was like, you're not talking about the non-Disney animated movie, are
you? I sure am.
You are.
Yes. I wish that that movie were an opera, because the music in that movie is wonderful. The animation is beautiful. The dialogue, voice actors, like that is a good example of a movie where they're like, and jokes, because it's animated, right? But like, jokes in the Exodus story? Come on. Like Jeff Goldblum is comic relief Aaron, which is weird. And it just, when I watch the beginning of that movie, the Deliver Us part, and I just am like, this is so powerful. I wish that I got 90 minutes of that feeling.
That sounds great. And now I'm curious about this movie I've never seen.
Oh, it's worth watching. It's Passover this weekend. Why not watch it?
My serious answer is another one of my favorite movies. And this was like the tiniest news story about 5 or 6 months ago. When someone kind of did a long YouTube video breaking down the John Hughes cut of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. The first cut of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles was also nearly 3 hours long.
People talked about that in Devin Sawa's thread quite a bit.
Yeah, it's... and I'm sure some of that is superfluous, and I'm sure some of that is just nice comedy scenes with two of the funniest actors who've ever lived, so I'd like to see those anyway. Mm-hmm. But apparently a lot of that is, like, heartbreaking. Apparently when you know people have talked to Steve Martin about the one key scene that's missing, and he, you know, to this day gets teary-eyed because it's a scene after, you know, it's revealed that John Candy doesn't have a home and is just wandering after the death of his wife, where they sit down and John Candy explains that and his feelings around it and why that makes him attached to people on the road, which is supposed to be this beautiful moving scene that no one has ever witnessed. It supposedly fleshes out some things that don't entirely make sense in the movie. A lot of the movie is about, like, this weird tension between Steve Martin's character and his wife, when really, like, that is not justified in the version you've seen, because it's just like, it snowed, he's away for a few days. Because an entire subplot where she suspected him of cheating was cut.
Okay.
And like all of these little misunderstandings that played into that fear.
Okay.
And like Michael McKean's character was nearly cut out of the movie. There's all of this stuff that, again, I don't think it needs to be 3 hours long, but there's a much better version that has never seen the light of day. These deleted scenes have never appeared on even a DVD release. And apparently they exist somewhere and may or may not have already rotted away into nothing.
So interesting.
There's a tiny little mini release the Hughes cut movement to save this content before it's gone. And I hope that happens because I love that movie, and that movie is a comedy that genuinely affects me. And I want to know what that is like.
I haven't seen that movie since childhood, which every Thanksgiving I'm like, you know what I should watch? And then I don't, because it's Thanksgiving and I'm busy. this year, I probably should have watched it, but I watched Home for the Holidays instead, which is my favorite Thanksgiving movie.
I've never seen Home for the Holidays.
Oh, you must watch it. The other one that I wanted to mention, which is more in line with Release the Snyder Cut, is the original version of American History X. And that is not because I really want to watch, like, I never want to rewatch American History X. I don't really, but I'm just curious about it because that was a big, I don't know if you remember this. This is when we were relatively young. That was a huge example of the director. Like, he almost did an Alan Smithy credit. Like, he was furious that the studio intervened. And it's so weird because, you know, the outcome was a very highly regarded movie. And so it's like, well, what? It's not the same as Justice League, where everybody was like, well, that was underwhelming, right? It was like, he made this movie, people loved it, and then he was like, that's not my vision. And I'm curious what his vision was. Also, what happened to that guy? I can't even remember his name. It's Tony something.
Remind, if this is too name-droppy, remind me to ask, but one of the only, like, touring comics I have any kind of vague relationship with is American History X co-star Guy Tori. Remind me if I ever do another weekend with him, you know, if comedy clubs come back and I perform in them. Two big questions. Remind me to see if he knows anything about that.
He made a movie in 2011 called Detachment with Adrian Brody. Another, whatever happened to that guy kind of person.
they got fed up and left. I don't know. Yeah. Adrian Brody was in everything for a while, and maybe he was like, nah, I got money now.
And he remains the youngest winner of Best Actor.
Ah.
The only sub-30 Best Actor winner.
A very memorable speech, slightly marred by, in retrospect, by kissing Halle Berry against her will. Who knows? It was a cute moment at the time that then you go, wait a minute.
Well, I mean, the reason that you go, wait a minute, is because she hated it. And oh, like,
I didn't know that.
She has, eventually she said in the press, like, why did that happen? That is not okay. And it's, like, one thing I also hate personally is that Adrian Brody then presented Charlize Theron with her Best Actress Oscar, and she reluctantly kissed. Like, she's like, I know I have to kiss you because of the bit, because he puts some breath spray in his mouth before he presents it. And I also, I'm sure that he says some glowing things about noted child rapist Roman Polanski, so who would later get a standing ovation in that Oscar ceremony when he won Best Director, in which you can see everyone you've ever loved, including Meryl Streep, stand up. And they also do a shot of Harvey Weinstein standing up for him. It is all horrible.
it's horrible. And this is I referenced this last week, and thus proving that attitudes can change and evolve. Mm-hmm. I was the same way. I was like, I mean, I was way too much of a defender of Roman Polanski. You know, with a dumb argument that basically boiled down to his pregnant wife got murdered by the Manson family. He's messed up now. Mm-hmm. You know, as a lot of people kind of fell back on that argument.
And also the whole, it was the time everybody was having sex right. with teenagers, right?
Right. And Meryl Streep and everyone else stood up and applauded him, and everyone felt good about the indisputably very good movie The Pianist winning a mm-hmm. bunch of Oscars. And now we go, you know what, we all thought about it more.
Yeah.
And we're not into that anymore.
Yes.
That's so possible and okay to do. People on the internet, I don't know who I'm railing against now.
No, and I agree. I just think that part of your attitude changing is that you need to publicly say, you know what, I was wrong.
Yeah. People,
which
really
some people
like.
Have done about Woody Allen. So,
well, this tangent is not particularly related to Justice League, but be sure to tell us your release.
I would say that it is, given that Joss Whedon is the person who was replaced. And I do think that the last 4 years have been a real reckoning with Joss Whedon. And, you know, we should have listened to Ray Fisher, right?
Yeah.
And that is something that I feel bad about, is that, you know, at that point I was starting to realize that Joss Whedon is bad, but I didn't say, when Ray Fisher came out and talked about the abusive, you know, behavior on set, I didn't say, all right, trash pile Joss Whedon. And really it was only after, you know, the women from the shows that I loved came out and said, trash pile Joss Whedon, that I put him in the trash pile. Although he is someone who I still think I'm going to watch Buffy because...
Well, sure.
But I don't think I can watch any Woody Allen movies. That's not true. I've watched several for my quest.
I mean, I think you'll watch them when he's dead.
I was going to say, I will eventually watch Manhattan after he dies.
Right. That is interesting. Not to overextend this. We can't call them mini-sodes.
Yeah, no, we're going to call them bonus episodes.
Right. Not to overextend this, but I do think it's notable that even with the fan movement, I don't know that this Justice League would exist if the world hadn't rightfully turned on Joss Whedon.
Exactly.
The fact that, you know, the version that Warner Brothers went with is by an asshole. Asshole, you know, is a very kind way to put it. And that a big part of that, of his... bad behavior, to overly euphemize it, about this movie is showing up, seeing that there was all of this stuff about the only Black superhero and going, yeah, cut all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Is like, I think that really helped this finally get see the light of day.
And that was some of the content that I was really enjoying.
Yeah.
Although we do not need to see him play football. Like when he's playing football and it's in slow motion, I'm like, oh, come on. I don't need this. Also, I couldn't remember what it was that made him need cyborg parts. And I really did not want to watch him get his neck broken or whatever at a football game because I saw someone die at a high school football game and I don't want to think about that. Yeah.
Holy shit. I know. I didn't know that.
He had sickle cell and got tackled and it triggered an attack and he died.
Oh my God.
It was horrible. Anyway, this episode has taken a dark turn. What is a lighthearted thing that we could say?
I was about to add that I watched a referee have a heart attack at a football game.
Oh my God.
But it was traumatic because it was like, I think it was an errant punt that hit the referee in the chest. Gosh. And yeah, it stopped his heart for a while. I think he survived.
Okay.
But no, we know how we end this. We end this by asking each other trivia questions the other one cannot possibly answer.
Oh, that's right. I didn't come in with one, so you're going to have to ask one and then maybe it will make me think of something.
I'm trying to think. There's no way you've seen Maximum Overdrive, right?
I have. What? Yes, I've seen Maximum Overdrive.
I thought that being horror averse and preferring to watch good movies when you do enter the genre, you hadn't seen Maximum Overdrive.
That was a movie that my dad was like, "Ooh, you want to watch this because it's so fascinatingly terrible," which it is.
That's what we watched that last night, not because I was like, "Hey, Mary Beth, this is a good movie," but because I was like, hey, this is worth looking at, which is exactly. Absolutely the case.
Yeah. But I have not seen it for many, many years, so I probably don't know the answer to this trivia question, which is...
It's an obvious one for anyone familiar with Maximum Overdrive, but is one of the joys of Maximum Overdrive. If you watch Maximum Overdrive, what is the very familiar voice you will constantly be hearing in a much different context?
I don't know the answer to that.
Maximum Overdrive is absolutely soaked with a high-pitched screaming character named Connie, who is the token hysterical woman in the horror movie, played by Yardley Smith, the voice of Lisa Simpson. So it's a weird experience to be like, man, I'm sick of Lisa Simpson screaming off screen in this weird horror movie.
Wonderful.
Got anything that I don't know? What's your last Quest movie? I won't even know what it is.
I don't think so. Because the Oscars death race is about to kick off, and because I watched My Dinner with Andre 3 times last week. I have not been watching any Oscar movies. I'm going to start tonight. Tonight is when I start watching things. And so I will be spending until April 25th watching a bunch of sad crap. So.
Godspeed. Justice for Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. That's the thing that was snubbed and... As we recorded the morning of, I didn't even realize it had been snubbed.
Oh, I mean, I knew that was gone, yeah. So.
I hoped it would get a screenplay or something, but that's a good movie and people should watch it. But yes. It's also really depressing. Recommend a joyful movie. That is how we're going to get out. Recommend something that is fun and nice.
Home for the Holidays.
I've never seen that.
It's quirky family does Thanksgiving is the movie. And so it has some sadness, but it's mostly very fun.
Watch Time Bandits and tell me if it's any good. I watched Time Bandits for the first time and I do not know if it's a good movie or not.
Speaking of bad men.
Yeah.
They're all bad. When the Louis C.K. thing was finally acknowledged, I remember there being a tweet, and as usual, I don't remember who tweeted it, but it was like, touches your piece. I'm getting word that they're all bad.
It's And I responded to that controversy by watching his movie, which they sent out the copies like 3 days before. And I was like, well, I'm reviewing it now. And it's gross. It's definitely gross.
Yeah. He made it. It was Manhattan, right? Yeah.
We can't end on a good note. We're sorry about everything.
Yeah. Well,
watch the Muppet Show on Disney Plus. It's fun.